It's very revealing that ethics and morals have become virtual synonyms in the English language today. And by the way, I just checked my thesaurus and was not surprised when ethics and morals were listed as synonyms. But it has not always been so. Ethics is what's called a normative science, as it deals with foundations, imperatives, oughts, shall nots, and fundamentals, things that traditional societies take for granted. For them, it's just the way things are. Then, by way of contrast, morals is a descriptive science dealing with mores and contemporary behavior. In other words, not what ought to be done, but what is being done. In the past, ethics, the oughts and moral absolutes always determined morals. But slowly a sea change has taken place. Now morals, mores, what is being done, determine ethics, not the other way round. And it works something like this. We discover what people are doing and then construct what we believe is ethically acceptable. If it's normal, quote unquote, if enough people are doing it, then it's okay. The Kinsey report discovered that 73% of the population of the USA believed that premarital sex was okay. And from then on, that simply made it okay. What we might call statistical morality then triumphs and becomes the alternative to biblical absolutes. In addition, technology now muddies the waters as it has a tendency to confuse means with ends. In fact, the word technology itself comes from the root technique, and the knowledge of the useful is now preferred above the knowledge of the good and the true. And then to this, we must also add the somber fact that ethics are now leveraged by technology. Let's give an example. The nuclear disaster at Chernobyl was not a simple accident. Papers are now being declassified that reveal that many of the safety features of the Chernobyl plant had been deliberately overridden. The motives of the perpetrators are unclear. It wasn't terrorism. But the code of ethics which guarded the installation were grossly and deliberately violated. The result? The site has now been encased in concrete, the whole site encased in concrete, and will remain toxic for as long as the pyramids have existed. And as you know, most of the surrounding countryside is uninhabitable. So in our age, as never before, ethics are leveraged by technology and usually with catastrophic results. Unethical behavior in the past could never have had such a disastrous and long-lasting result. And of course, examples could be multiplied and multiplied, genetic engineering being just one. But they all compound the crisis that faces both us and the generation to come. There is, of course, no simple answer to reverse the trend. But for us in the church, one imperative is for us to strive to close the gap between belief and behavior. And as you know, all the survey work done by groups like Gallup, etc., make it abundantly clear that the lifestyle of believers, their level of integrity, how they spend their money, how they handle marriage, etc., is not significantly different from the lifestyle of unbelievers. Someone made the helpful distinction between what we might call data beliefs and control beliefs. It was a well-known sociologist, but I've forgotten his name just now. But closing the gap between our data beliefs and our control beliefs is of critical importance if we're to have any impact on our culture and once again allow ethics to determine morals and not the other way around. Perhaps I should say just a few more words about data beliefs and control beliefs. The best way would be to draw a chart and under data beliefs list a number of things, and under control beliefs list a number of things, and simply contrast them. Now, I can't do that, but I can kind of create an audio chart. We'll, as it were, put on one side data beliefs, on the other side control beliefs, and then I'm going to put, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things under each one. So data beliefs, they're mental. They're what I think. Control beliefs, they're volitional. They're what I choose. Data beliefs are just that. They're beliefs. For instance, I believe it's wrong to lie. But control beliefs are not just beliefs, okay? They are behavior. In other words, I might believe it's wrong to lie, but I lie regularly, and a gap has opened up between my data beliefs, it's wrong to lie, and my behavior, the fact that I lie regularly. Data beliefs are propositional. Control beliefs are motivational. Okay, it's what actually motivates me. Data beliefs are cognitive, they're intellectual. Control beliefs are incarnational. They're how I actually live. Now, data beliefs are head and heart beliefs. And we might say that control beliefs are hands and feet, okay? Beliefs. Let me just explain what I mean, because often when I talk about this, people say, oh yes, data beliefs, that's head beliefs, control beliefs, that's heart beliefs. No, that's not what's being said. You see, with data beliefs, I can believe totally with my head and my heart that adultery is absolutely wrong. I can completely believe that, both with my head and with my heart. But the fact that my data beliefs can be separated from my control beliefs means that even though I believe that with my head and my heart, I actually, with my hands and my feet, go out and act in a different way. And I commit adultery. Now, I don't go back home and with some scissors cut out the commandment that says thou shalt not commit adultery, because I still believe it with my whole heart. But the fact is that I separated, okay, my data beliefs from my control beliefs. And tragically, that's what's happened in the church. And unfortunately, there's never an easy road to recover what's been lost in a culture. But if we as believers can take small steps and begin closing the gaps between belief and behavior, it's a good way to start. Jesus said that we are salt and light, okay? We're the salt of the earth and we're the light of the world, hinting that most of the ingredients that promote human flourishing are only to be found in the kingdom. And instead of believing that the centers of power, government, and popular culture determine the ethics by which we live, we need to recover a vision of the church as being mandated by God to advocate and demonstrate an ethic of love and righteousness that dignifies what it means to be human. And one small step in this direction, which we can make as individuals, is to close the gap that's opened in my life between belief and behavior. And if we can go further, the gap that's opened up in the community of faith between belief and behavior, and integrate once again our data and our control beliefs. Now, I'm a Londoner, and we grew up not having a car, and I basically lived on the London Underground. I didn't quite live on the London Underground, but I traveled on it regularly everywhere. It was simply my means of moving around. From when I was a small boy, first being taken by my mother, and then even when I was 5 or 6, traveling by myself. So I really know the London Underground. In fact, I have a friend who wrote his PhD on the London Underground. I don't mean that he sat on the London Underground writing his PhD. I mean that his PhD was about the London Underground. Well, I don't know it that well, but I know it pretty well. And one of the interesting things is that on some stations, not that many, but some, the gap between when you pulled into the station, the gap between the train and the platform was so wide that if you didn't watch it, particularly if you were a child, if you didn't watch your step, you could actually fall down the gap between the train and the platform. And so just as the electric doors were open, there would come this recorded message booming out, mind the gap, is kind of burnt into my subconscious, mind the gap. And somebody said that the gap is the distance between where we are and where we want to go. Okay, and that's the thing that we need to close. Somebody said that the church is the presence of the future. In other words, look at how kingdom people live now, and you'll get a glimpse of what the kingdom will look like in the future. Or perhaps I need to say, look at how kingdom people live now, and you might get a glimpse of what the kingdom will look like in the future. And the stakes are very high. If we fail to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world in the age in which we live, disasters like Chernobyl will be minor. They will be minor compared to the forces of destruction that will make human flourishing a vain hope in the 21st century. So it's time to mind the gap and close the distance between where we are and where we want to go, to close the distance between belief and behavior, between our data beliefs and our control beliefs. And the encouraging thing is, it doesn't take a conference, it doesn't take a committee, it doesn't take a symposium. It's something that I can begin to do today. And so it's a personal challenge to each one of us that name the name of Jesus. And of course, we may feel like we're acting alone, but we are a body. And what happens in the hand affects the foot. And so we can indeed together close the gap. But we don't need to wait, okay? It's something I can begin to do in my life today.